He doesn't sound like a nerd,
but the computers are still scared of him.
Guiding you on your computer quest, here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We've got a bunch of things for you this week on Computer Talk Radio. And the funny thing is, a number of these things really tie into a lot of news items. And I hadn't planned it like this until I realized how crazy it actually worked out. So Steve Kesky is going to talk about sonar. Marty's going to talk about powering up at trade shows and elsewhere, as well as covering the J5 Create Power Bank. And then we get into the scam series, bypassing restrictions scam. And they've got ways to, well, I don't want you to blindly reply to text messages, and we'll go into that later. On the IT Pro series, my personal experience with burnout. And I've got a number of different questions along the way. Allison asks about mechanical watches, and this is where some of these things start to go into the news topics. Danielle asks about the technology singularity and will it ever happen? Caleb asks, how can we as a country push back against surveillance? Michael, should we worry about China spying on individuals? And Keith M. Zedor, he and I are going to talk about TikTok, our own personal views on it, beyond the whole news aspect. If you miss any of those items, of course, the website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. Click on where it says listen here. And if you want to reach out to us, of course, you can contact us there at the website, or you can phone me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. Now, unless the Supreme Court steps in, TikTok is actually days away from being banned or bought out or whatever. And there's going to be a lot of different things that are all going to unfold over the course of the coming days. The list of names who have been presented as being involved in looking at buying it out: SpaceX King Elon Musk, Mogul King Kevin Leary, YouTuber Mr. Beast, and there's other lesser known folks, billionaire Frank McCourt, Bobby Kotick, who is the CEO of Blizzard Activision, and even Doug McMillon of Walmart, along with a number of others. This is going to come down to the wire, and all of this is changing constantly. TikTok, fifth largest social media platform in the world with over 1.5 billion users each month. But a ban in the United States, that would actually set them back pretty far. So we'll see how that all unfolds. We'll be talking about that probably for the next few weeks. Chinese-based DJI, they're the drone manufacturer. They've been coming under fire for the last year for their drones and the possibility of spying on us. And they did an interesting thing, however, which is not going to win friends here in the States, where for 10 years they have blocked drones from restricted areas. Think of airports, military bases, and all of that. They have now said that effective this week, they're removing that ban, that blocking feature. Their DJI Fly app is going to give alerts based on FAA requirements, but users of the drones can just bypass these notices. It's hard to say what DJI hopes to gain by this effort, but it's not going to be goodwill with our country, which just gave them a few weeks ago a year to figure things out. Now, while this next item is legal, it does feel wrong. A study was done for hotel reservations, and it found out that if you lived in San Francisco, just as an example, your hotel would be more than if you had an address in Kansas City or Phoenix, Arizona. This is price discrimination, and it's presumably because it is assumed that you live in an area that costs more to live, so you'll have more cash to pay for the hotel. The comparison was rather specific. It noted a monthly, or rather nightly, rate for a Manhattan hotel room at $500 more per night for San Francisco residents than the test areas, which I've already mentioned, Kansas City and Phoenix, for the exact same room, the exact same dates. They did this all at the same time. They compared browser information, incognito mode, computer information, and a number of other factors. The origination of the booking was the one key factor that really changed those numbers. They have suggested that the only way around that appears to be utilizing a VPN that looks like it's coming from a less affluent city. This past week, New York State managed to clear the last legal hurdle for a low-income enforcement on broadband pricing. What does that mean? So they dictated $15 or $20 a month, depending on the speeds of 25 or 200 megabit. And this applies to all broadband providers. This was at the end of a four-year battle, which saw a lot of pushback, with providers noting these caps restrict the ability to improve and expand services, basically cutting into all of their profit and then some. So AT&T has already announced they're going to cancel home internet service in New York, noting that they actually only offer it through wireless, not wired service. It's not like they run out the lines in the state of New York. So that was actually easy for them. AT&T users are being told they have 45 days to turn in equipment. At this moment, I don't have information on any of the other providers, but I'm sure they're not happy. Sam Altman, he's the CEO of OpenAI. You may have heard of ChatGPT. OpenAI is the makers of that. Anyways, he made some headlines this week in his predictions for the new year. Artificial general intelligence, he predicts, is going to happen. Now, this concept is a tall order from what has been seen thus far. This AGI, artificial general intelligence, basically moves this up quite a bit. So it would be including reasoning, strategizing, solving puzzles, making judgments under uncertainty. And there's a number of other different factors that they throw in that say this is AGI versus something larger than the large language models that we've seen for the last couple of years. It includes learning, planning, and a host of these other leaps that others have said might be on the order of decades away. So now, while Sam Altman may be right, being closer to the teams that are working on it, there are so many different definitions of this and arguments that are going to go in vastly different directions. It does bear noting that it will become better than we've seen. We already know this. So our lives are likely to be affected and change in the coming years as AI, whatever version or level or whatever it is, becomes more robust and starts to appear smarter than it ever has before. JP Morgan Chase declared a return to office plan, and they targeted March as when everybody had to be in the office. Now, this move affects 300,000 employees, and they announced this in an internal memo last week. So I want you to think about this. They put this on an internal website and said, hey, everybody, we're going to ask you all to come back into the office. Well, no, we're telling you, you better come back into the office. See, now, where they went wrong was that the website where they posted it, it allows comments. It allows for feedback. It allows for people to say, hey, I don't like this. Yeah, and a lot of people did. So the company, after seeing a large number of postings critical of the decision, they said, oh, we're going to turn off comments. This really leaves me in a bind over my feelings. Okay, sure, they have the right to say we want people to return to the office. They also have the right to the choice to allow or decline comments. And they've done this allegedly in the past. But this is something that really impacts so many people. And it's a controversial decision. It presents a very a wildly negative impression about the lack of concern for any of the individuals who may be impacted and are seeking an outlet of a chance to share their voice, to comment on this. Those affected by this decision may feel even further marginalized through this squelching of their speech. And we can't call it free speech because, okay, it's the company's website, but all of this is never really good for morale. So I struggle with that. Last up, Amazon's Try Before You Buy is spinning down at the end of this month after being put in place in 2018. This was a good feature for people in hard-to-fit sizes like myself. However, it did drive a higher amount of returns for Amazon. So this is a pain point, as they say, $816 billion. I can't believe that number is that high. Maybe it's a million. Anyways, in lost sales due to returns in 2022 and presumably more since. Amazon's announcement reflected how they worked to apply other features like an AI virtual try-on, size recommendations, and other features which should improve the experience otherwise. Coming up next, should we worry about China spying on individuals? That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
Micah's question is one of the most common questions I get. How long will my computer last? You can reach out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com or you can phone me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. Micah, how long will my computer last? Can I make it last longer through any special maintenance or other tricks? So I want you to think of your computer like a car. The second you drive it off the lot, it is already devalued. It's already... Okay, yeah. Look, even if you drive your car carefully, we will experience wear and tear. That happens over the course of time. You get little scratches, you get little dents, and it's going to have some level of devaluation, of course. However, if you regularly do the checkups, the oil changes, and upgrades on your car, just like we can do with a computer, you can keep it running efficiently for much longer. The lifespan of any computer depends on a number of different factors, but with proper care, you can maximize its use. So, the average lifespan of a computer, most computers, especially well-built ones, are going to last anywhere around 5 years. There's some give and play to this. If you are just surfing the internet, doing email, and watching YouTube videos or Netflix, you might get a couple more years out of it. If you're doing a lot of programming, you're doing a lot of different higher technology items, you may get a shorter lifespan out of it. I generally run about 2 to 3 years before I move on to the next computer. And that is just a part of how I've been operating and budgeting for a very long time. Laptops, you might get a shorter lifespan due to battery wear and limited upgrade options and things like that. So you need to be aware that this does exist out there. Maintenance is going to help you along the way. There's a number of different maintenance items that I talk about and I cover on a regular basis. I'm going to go through just a few of these right now. Part of this is going to be cleaning the dust out from the vents, the internal fans. If you've got access into the computer, easy access. I'm not talking about most of the laptops, but on a desktop, you can go in and you can clean out all of the different dust bunnies that gather in there. If it's a laptop, you can gently put air in through those vents that are on the side and in the back and gently blow that dust out. Do not force a lot of air in there. Don't expect that you're going to be able to go on up with this big, huge, high power air hose and blow all of that out. The hardware isn't really designed for that. But as a generalization, we can clean out that dust. You want to keep your software and your drivers up to date. This is a very key thing there. And along the way, some of those updates are going to slow your computer down. That is just part of the evolution process of operating systems, of the different applications that we install on the systems. When they come out, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, whenever it is, when they came out, they were designed for the hardware of the day. But as they moved along, they said, oh, we need to add in this fix. We need to add in this upgrade. We need to add in this feature. And as they added in each of those, they didn't think about the hardware of the day when they first sold it. They think of the hardware of the day when they're actually working on this. And yes, Moore's Law continues to push the processing power forward. You're not going to run Windows 11 on a system that you purchased back in 95, a 30-year-old system. It's just not going to work. But yes, along the way, we can also look at 3 years ago when Windows 11 came out. The processing power has doubled and then doubled again in that same time frame. And the people who are programming Windows 11, yes, we're experiencing a little bit of slowdown on those older systems. Not a whole lot, but it all racks up. It all mounts up through all of this. So you want to monitor your resource usage. You want to be thinking about what is the resource usage towards your hard drive, towards your memory, towards your CPU. You want to pop up Task Manager on a regular basis and see how taxed your computer is throughout a standard day. And you need to keep track on that. And I would say do that every few months just to see if your system is slowing down. And you can think about some of these other experiences as you're going through and you can see, is my computer actually running slower? And try to quantify that data. Try to attach certain numbers. It used to take 30 seconds to boot up. Now it takes 45 seconds to boot up. Now it takes 5 minutes to boot up. If it takes 5 minutes to boot up, time to replace. And your own timing in there is going to be different. And maybe it boots very slowly, but everything runs fast on it once it's up and running. Maybe it boots very fast, but everything is slow when you're trying to move about the computer. It's all going to be based off of your comfort level here. You do want to use anti-malware software. You want to protect against malware. Those are one of the really big sources that we have a hard time controlling that will impact your computer speed, your reliability, and so forth. So you're going to track all of that. If you're using a traditional hard drive, most of us have moved away from them, but if you've got an older system, you might run defrag. Just check ahead of time to see if you're running a solid state drive or the old fashioned hard drive. And along the way, you can do some upgrades. There are key components along the way that you can give a little bit more life. If you're thinking about this on a really old system, I would avoid it just because the amount of money that you can spend on upgrading your RAM, for instance, upgrading the storage system from an old-fashioned hard drive to a solid-state drive. These are things that will boost performance, but you may find that you're going to spend a lot more in that direction that is not going to be upgrading all of the components, but only certain components that are slowdown points. And you may get to a point where, okay, I've gone through and I've upgraded the RAM. That ran me $150. And I've upgraded the drive to a solid state drive, and it's a larger solid state drive. So that was another $120. So we've already thrown $270 at this. Okay, at $270, you're already a good portion of the way towards a new system at, let's say, just generally $800. So is that really worth it for a system that's 7 years old? Probably not. For a system that's 2 years old, did you underbuy when you bought it? I don't know. So there's a lot of questions that are going to pop up, and you've got to really weigh this out for yourself. And this will lead into a discussion of replacement. But those upgrades are capable of giving you a little bit of power back. Now, when should you replace it? If it's going to cost a significant amount of its current replacement value, you need to think about it just like we would with a car. Okay, it's going to cost me this much to upgrade. It's going to cost me this much to replace the engine and the transmission. Okay, that's a significant thing on a car that is 20 years old. And computers really do not have a lot of that sentimental value. They don't also hold the same value that a car does. So you have to weigh that all on out. So I would say that if your computer can no longer run essential software or updates without significantly slowing down, it may be time to upgrade or replace. If it still performs well with some of these tweaks, you can get some more time out of it. All of this, I want you to think about it like changing the oil on your car. If you have even a reliable engine, regular maintenance is going to help with breakdowns. By keeping your computer updated and well-maintained and upgrading when necessary, you will get some additional usefulness out of the system. You'll avoid a lot of these sudden crashes. With proper care, yes, your computer can run efficiently for a number of years. Are you going to get a lot of lifetime out of it? I don't know. We have to weigh out a lot of these different decisions, and we have to be planning ahead always by budgeting for our next computer. Why? Because you will need another computer at some point in time, and another one after that, and another one after that. We're in an endless replacement cycle. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Phone number 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. Keith McDonough joins me now, and it's kind of funny. On this one, Keith, you know, we have gone years...
Where no man has gone before.
No. This isn't Star Trek. No. We have gone years. You and I haven't had any discussions whatsoever. You and I have talked about Facebook on occasion, Instagram, maybe Snapchat once or twice, personally. But I don't recall you ever talking to me about TikTok. And it was very funny because it came up in the news and you go, hey, let's talk about TikTok this week on Computer Talk Radio. I'm like, what? Are you okay? Let me even ask, are you even on TikTok?
I'm going to answer you, but I'm going to qualify it. I have the app, it's on my phone, but the only reason I have it is, you know, it's like having Windows Media Player on a Mac. It's like sometimes you get a video file when somebody sends you the link.
Okay.
And you don't want to mess around with it. You just want to play the video that somebody intended to send you. So for that reason alone, yes, I have TikTok on my phone. Do I have an account with them? No. Do I create content with it and post content? No.
Okay, so I'm pretty much in the same place. I've got it there. I've got a lot of these apps that I load on, and they stay there, and they get nearly unused. And before we go any further, I will mention that we're touching on a topic that is constantly evolving. We're not even going to dive into the news of all of the whole TikTok ban and who might buy it or who did buy it or will buy it or any of that. So let's put that aside.
Okay.
So TikTok. So why are you not drawn like the millions of other people to the number five social media platform?
Honestly, Benjamin, in my estimation, it's a Johnny Come Lately. It's a reiteration of not one, but two apps that we already have that are based here in the U.S. If I want to watch short form videos, I will first go to YouTube because they give you this similar, vertical video style on my phone. And you can endlessly scroll there, and also on Instagram.
You left off Facebook Reels. You left off Facebook Reels, which is right up there, too.
You know what? That's kind of part and parcel, but I'm already going to be on Facebook anyway for other stuff, and I'll hit one or two. But I don't know. I'm not as addicted. I don't see the addiction to Facebook Reels only because I'm doing other things on Facebook, whether it's for Computer Talk Radio or Just Pour the Milk or my personal feed. I'm doing other things on Facebook. Yeah, I'll catch a video or two. But the other two platforms, or the three platforms, if you're including TikTok, there's just so much redundancy there. And with all of the politics, and it's owned by a Chinese-led company, ByteDance, all of that stuff, regardless of whether it's going away or whatever, there doesn't need to be an algorithm with all of my preferences going to China. If it was the only game in town for dopamine-inducing videos, and it's like, oh, wow, this is really cool. Okay, China, but it's not. If I want to watch videos and endlessly stream and scroll, I could do that on YouTube. I can do that on Instagram. And to your point, I could do it on Facebook.
Well, okay, but if you think about it, why do we have General Motors and Ford and Toyota and Honda and all of these? Point.
If you said to me, "Oh, the biggest company in the world for cars, General Motors, it's secretly owned by China," I said, "Well, I'm driving a Nissan anyway, so I don't care."
Okay.
Other people are making a product in this space. To that point, it's not just YouTube and Instagram. Also, like you said, it's also Facebook. I can get this kind of product in at least three other spaces. Yeah. I don't need to go to something owned by China and deal with the political ramifications of is it good, is it bad? I don't need it.
Yeah.
Do I view stuff on it? Sure. But only because other people send me links to see stuff. I just as soon stay elsewhere.
Okay. And that's fair. I personally try to avoid a lot of the social media stuff. Yes, there are times where I'm bored and I'm sitting in the DMV is like just a weird, rare example. Sitting there, okay, I'm standing in line for 20 minutes. I can read a book, which is kind of hard, or I can use my Bluetooth and I can watch some Facebook Reels or whatever it is I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. But you do have a point there. It's a matter of there's a wealth of options for doing exactly that. And in my case, I would go to Facebook first. I do have, again, I've got TikTok. I've got no interest because I can get a lot more text-based items. I can get a lot more of the individuals that I know instead of a feed that gives me all kinds of crazy things like people, dancing.
For me,
I don't know.
I mean, a lot of our listeners on the main show know that I also host our spinoff podcast, Just Pour the Milk, about breakfast cereal.
Yeah.
And there are some cereal groups with mostly boomers and mostly Gen X and millennials, but there's even a couple of boomers in there, like older than we are, who talk about cereal. And I can get really engaged in there. I don't need to be on TikTok.
Right. You know, right. Exactly.
I could stay on US-based things and be entertained and engaged. endlessly.
So if they if the ban goes through, it's nobody buys it.
It's a non-starter for me. Non-starter. Totally non-starter.
And for me, it's you know, I'll comment on it here and there. I don't know that a great case has been made for a ban. I don't know that it's not.
I'm going to say this, Benjamin,
because I'm not interested in it. I don't follow it enough.
I'm going to say this one last thing about it. Anytime I do use TikTok, I have never opened the app manually. It's because I've hit a link that somebody sent to me, and I view the content there. And then I try to remember I'm in there, get out as quickly as possible.
Oh, I'm in TikTok. Let me get out of here. Okay, fair enough. That is a very viable approach. For me, it's, I'm in social media. I need to get out of here. My number one social media, oddly enough, is LinkedIn. LinkedIn. I read a lot of IT stuff and business stuff over there. But
it's Facebook for personal and Instagram for business.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Cedor.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back with you in regards to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Marty Winston joins me now. Marty.
I have a question.
Yes?
Do you have any charge cards in your wallet?
Charge card? Like credit MasterCard, card. Visa? Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, do you have any of those charge cards in your Google Wallet?
So I'm over on the other side.
Oh, you're
side
on the Apple
fence.
Side.
Yes.
Fine.
I do have a couple of those digitally, yeah.
Let's see. And what happens if you want to charge but your phone doesn't have one? Have you lost your ability to pay?
So for me, I always have my wallet with me. So.
Oh, how redundant. This yeah. is a guy who believes in backup.
Yes, that's of course. Yeah.
I just think it's so ironic that we spend a lot of attention on making sure we can charge with the phone.
Yeah.
And then not making sure the phone has a charge so you can charge. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is very fair.
Now, you and I have both traveled to trade shows.
Once or twice, yes.
and there was an era when you had to carry something like a car battery and an inverter and a charge adapter in order to keep your phone going, right?
I do remember those days, yes.
A lot of power banks are out there these days. Some of them have massive amounts of power. You know, you want to run the Rockettes for a month, you can do that.
Sure.
Some of them are just to keep you going on the trip. And I want to cover both because I've been looking at when I travel, and I've done more trade shows this year than usual. I don't want to have that dent in my shoulder from the strap on the bag holding the charger and everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really hard to avoid. So I look at two things in a charger.
Mm-hmm.
I look at if I'm willing to deal with the mass, the weight of the thing,
mm-hmm.
is size going to be helpful? And the other way around, if I have to prioritize size, will there be enough charge?
Yeah, that's a very tricky trade-off there. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd also, can I recharge it from an outlet under the seat, or do I have to recharge it from USB if my recharger needs recharging?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm finicky, if you're finicky, the finicky standards held by our spouses.
Yes. Yes.
My wife wants something with her that doesn't take up the whole purse, takes up hardly any of it,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that she can travel for 2 or 3 days and not have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found one. It's from our friends at J5 Create.
Okay, yeah.
All right. It's their JPB5220 USB-C pocket power bank.
Okay. Now,
you can tell the battery inside of it is about, the size of your thumb, maybe a little longer, like mm-hmm. a lot of those famous lithium-ion batteries we dealt with before.
Sure.
I didn't open it up to look. It's just that kind of shape. And there's a little right angle for the Android part of the world USB-C connector on it.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So you just plug it in to the bottom of your phone.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, you can also use that to plug into your charger if you want, or there's a charging port on the side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what you get is almost 5 amp hours of stored charge with a very beefy 20-watt PD-compatible delivery to your phone. So,
okay.
It's small enough, it's light enough, and reliable enough that it now lives in my wife's purse. It's about 30 bucks.
Yeah, this is a neat little power bank. It's as wide as... I would say, I'm guessing, is that the larger phones?
It's a little wider than the phone.
Yeah, it depends on the size.
Yeah, that's the length of the battery, but because it's in line with the bottom of the phone, you don't really notice that.
Mm-hmm.
Where you aren't likely to, where I noticed it, and you know, forgive me, not everything I do is compatible with everything else I do.
Mm-hmm.
The connector wasn't quite long enough to plug into the phone with my OtterBox case on the phone.
Oh, okay.
But that didn't matter. It didn't matter. So my wife doesn't use those cases, and she gets pretty phones and plug this in the bottom, and she keeps going. Part of the lesson is, if you're going to travel, decide how many things you need to charge for how long and how often you're going to have a chance mm-hmm. to recharge mm-hmm. your recharger, the power bank. The other thing really is what works for you. You know, it comes down to size. It comes down to cost. It comes down to the power capacity. It comes down to what you're recharging. And it comes down to your patience for these things. Now, getting enough capacity into something small enough, light enough, cheap enough, it helps if it charges quickly enough that you don't have to hang it on the phone for the whole trip.
Sure, definitely. Man, I'm just thinking back to the old days when I had a bag phone. Got 30 minutes of calling power out of that, maybe 4 hours of standby, something like that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And it was heavy. Beat up a burglar, hit him over the head with it.
Yeah. You know, guys, if you're going to look for one, include J5 Create in your search.
Definitely. That's J5Create.com is their website, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, but they're also in Micro Center, a lot of stores, a lot of the onliners.
Sure. All right. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. It's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade. But I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The site-ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com. The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. They are constantly trying out new tricks, and they are working with social engineering to get you to let your guard down. The latest that has come out is this end run around one of the built-in protections against scams that is built into the Apple iPhone. Now, this does actually apply to everybody. This entire concept is something you need to be aware of. So what happens with the iPhone is if you receive an SMS message from an unknown number, basically a text comes in, it doesn't know who it is, they will lock down any of the links in that message. Now, how do they get around this? Well, the scammers have found that if you trust them, that basically the links will start working. So what they've done, the scammers, will send you out this text message. And along with this, they're going to provide you with a link. And then they're going to go through, and this link is disabled when you initially get it. But then they ask you, please reply yes or why, and then exit the text message, then reopen up that whole text message again, or they direct you to copy the link to the Safari browser to open it. It then goes forward into this whole phishing arrangement, trying to get more information out of you. But it's also done something else. By replying yes, you've also told people that yes, you are an active user of that particular phone number. That allows them to continue to send more information to you. It opens up the confirmation that yes, you are a little bit more gullible. You'll follow a little bit more instructions. So it's a big, huge setup here. They're accomplishing a couple of different things along the line. They're having you say yes. They're having you connect up and tell them, hey, this is an active number. They are indicating perhaps that you are an iPhone user. And then, yes, they're going to try to get information from you this time or next time. Look, anytime you receive any kind of message that you should reply yes to, oh, please reply yes to this so we can put you on our list. Well, they may not even tell you put you on our list. Every time you do that, though, you are acknowledging a connection. You're acknowledging some kind of a, if you will, a customer relationship with them. So they will send that link on, your information on, to other people. They'll tell all of their friends, and all of their friends will come, and they will also try to scam you, fish you, or whatever else. Look, if you are not sure about if a message is genuine or not, I'm going to tell you right now, don't reply to it. If it's a company you know, yes, you can contact them through the official channels, but I'm going to say pretty much you want to avoid this. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about the Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Gigabyte, kilobyte, terabyte, megabyte, all this stuff makes my brain megahertz. Fortunately, someone is available to explain all this technobabble, helping you make sense of technology. Here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. Of course, the website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com, the phone number, 888-NERD-888, that's 888-6373-888. We cover all kinds of different topics. We answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, and my Mac just booted up. I have no idea why, but so there we go. We are radio's broadest look at computers and technology, and that means that sitting here at my desks, I have a Mac, I have a Chromebook, I have a PC, I have an iPhone, I have an iPad, I have a tablet that is an Android tablet as well. So all kinds of different things here. So yes, making further good on our promise of radio's broadest look at computers and technology is the one and only Steve Keske, who joins us now. And Steve, what do you have for us this week?
I was thinking about things the other day, and I say, how old is some technology?
Okay.
Well, I found out that sonar, the actual idea of being able to hear things far away, goes all the way back to Leonardo da Vinci.
To da Vinci. Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
He took a tube, put it in water, and could hear a far distant rowing boat that he couldn't see.
Okay. Do tell. Wow.
So that's the real use of sonar.
Yeah.
That we know of today.
Yeah.
Was first used in World War One.
Okay. That is when we started to really see a lot of the usage of submarines. I know we had like there were submarines and ironclad ships during the Civil War.
Yep.
And I recall like you used to live near the Monitor Merrimack
area,
yeah, where they had the they had their battle, yeah.
Yeah, the only Civil War submarine was for the Confederacy, and it sunk a ship.
Okay.
And that's the only Civil War submarine, and it sank right away.
Yeah. But that gives us an idea of how, how long it took for them to move through these things. So let's get back on that track of sonar. So World War One.
World War One, and that was very passive sonar.
Okay.
And what I mean by passive is, they had it, but they really didn't know what to do with it yet.
Yeah, okay. And so I presume that was like just a really sensitive microphone, and it was listening to the various
whatever's
items,
in the
different echoes, and okay.
But it wasn't until World War Two, that we have people that actually sat down and listened to a sound, from a microphone going through the water, hitting an object and coming back, and they could tell eventually with a little bit of training what it was, how far was it away, and how big it was, and which direction it was going.
Okay.
But that was a whole lot of training in sounds by people.
Okay.
It wasn't until World War II, later on in the war,
yeah,
that they actually got, started to get into realizing some of the other sounds in
yeah.
the water.
Yeah.
Like whales.
Okay.
And
you're not going to tell me a fish story, are you?
No.
No, okay. No. Sorry, I just saw an opportunity for a bad joke and I took it.
I understand. No, and it wasn't until way later on, I would say probably in the probably 60s, yeah. maybe even into the 70s when we yeah. really got into being able to discern and use computers
yeah.
to help diagnose what they're listening to.
Okay.
And doing all that computation without having a pad of paper to work with.
Sure, yeah.
But to actually figure out, hey, is this a submarine or not? A good analogy would be to watch the movie Red October.
Yes, yes. I love that movie, too.
Yeah,
I
love the part where the sonar guy says, yeah, but just because the computer said it was one, I don't think it was.
Yes, yes, where he comes up and he says, you know, we're supposed to look for, you know, what is it, geothermal anomalies or yeah. something like that. Yeah,
that's it.
Underwater volcanoes. It but yeah. it's too rhythmic to be an underwater volcano.
That's right.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And I
found it interesting, too, the usage of pings. That movie, but yeah, the move there went from the passive sonar arrays you were talking about,
sure.
just really sensitive microphones, to active sound coming out.
Right,
but it's similar to radar, you know, where a signal goes out and it goes in radar. It's regular radio waves goes out through the air.
Right.
And then comes on back.
Right.
So with sonar, is it still an audible sound or is it...
It's still an audible sound.
Okay. All right.
And the really sensitive microphones now
yeah.
can pick up sounds of people walking around in a submarine.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, that guy, it kind of goes back to a lot of these submarine movies we
oh,
watch
yeah.
and we go through
oh, yeah.
and we see them and they have, you know, when they're supposed to go silent and everybody
oh, yeah.
just kind of holds still and
holds their breath.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the whole idea, is that somebody on the surface can now pick up your voice underwater.
Yeah.
And that went pretty far into the 60s and the 70s when they got computers, and the computers now can discern one sound from another just by its audible signal. But sonar itself
mm-hmm.
and that whole concept of technology has many, many other uses.
Okay. Sure. We've got just a few minutes left. What are some of the uses that we have for sonar other than finding fish and listening to Russian soldiers sing as their silent drive goes off?
Right. The whole other thing is almost every pregnant woman, that's a wife, in the United States has had a sonogram. And a sonogram is sonar.
Okay, go on.
And it's that sonogram that lets them see, again, through water, what's yeah. going on.
Okay, yeah.
That's one. But sound also travels very well through a solid.
Yeah.
So what they have now devised is sonar. They don't call it sonar, but really that's what it is, to when they're creating steel plating for, like, ships.
Yeah.
They'll go through and they'll use sonar or sound to detect flaws in the metal.
Oh, okay.
They do the same thing with aircrafts.
Okay.
All right. Metal, the flaws sound differently than the rest of the metal.
Sure.
Who knew?
Yeah. Well, okay, but I mean, actually, if you think about it, though, I think we've known that for quite a while.
Oh,
defects
yeah.
in metal. Let's look at the Liberty Bell.
Wow.
The big, huge crack there.
Sure.
I mean, that made the bell sound completely different.
And one of nature's uses of sonar
mm-hmm.
is an elephant.
Okay.
And an elephant will stand and make a very low frequency growl that
yeah.
can be heard by other elephants miles and miles and miles away.
Well, that's because they got the big ears.
Well, no, it's because they got big feet.
And big feet.
Because they're nice
enough.
And
yeah.
they're flat. They're nicely on the ground. And they can pick up the vibrations and the sounds.
Very cool. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll be back with more of radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact us and our lives in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. Caleb reached out to me. How can we as a country push back against surveillance technologies that threaten personal privacy and liberty? Caleb reached out to me. The phone number 888-NERD, 888. That's 888-637-3888. This is a big question because part of this, I am going to say we need our government to be involved, but we need to be involved in our government and we need to be pushing for this and we need to be thinking about these different things all the way along. Surveillance technology is like having cameras in every room of our house. It might feel secure, but it really takes away, it strips away the very freedoms that make our home a sanctuary. So protecting our privacy, it requires that we all be very careful. We have to be vigilant. We have to take proactive measures. And while I am very much in favor of a hands-off kind of government, especially in a field where they do not know what they're talking about, technology, we still have to have some level of going through and making sure that we are safe and we are secure as individuals. The whole idea of government is to protect our country, to protect our states, to protect us as individuals. That is far more important than so many of the other things that they get into, like measuring the amount of methane that is emitted by cows and things like that. So first off, we all need to be advocating for privacy first policies. And what does that mean? That really means that we need to be pushing for laws that limit the usage of any kind of surveillance technologies by corporations, but also by governments. And when I say by governments, I'm not even saying international governments. I'm saying even our own government. We have so many different databases in our country that are being handled by our government. And our government should not be keeping intricate details on everything they can capture, everything that they can find, everything that they possibly know about us. It is absolutely scary to read some of these different things where, okay, the government is monitoring all of Facebook postings for not just individuals, but entire swaths and groups of people and whatever they post on Facebook. That's disturbing. And we can extend this to Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and all of that. And they have no business there. And yes, they argue, well, it's out in the open. You posted this, so why can't we track this? And the reality is, yeah, they can, because we are putting it out in the open, but I don't think they should. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. And that's a common theme throughout the entire Jurassic Park movie series. And, you know, that was not the first time I heard something like that, but it was really broken down into those very simple words. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And I think we need to be all pushing for the idea of privacy for everything, even if it's posted out in public. It doesn't mean our government needs to track any of this. So I do support the idea of decentralized tools, encryption, and encryption-based applications and decentralized platforms will all keep our personal information secure. And one of the things that for the longest time that I have really struggled with is the idea that encryption, the top encryption, should only be available to us here in the United States. I go back to things like PKZIP and PGP. Both of those came under distinct fire because of the encryption that they used and in the idea of, okay, we export this. And export is not a physical term in this case. It's a knowledge term. We can't allow anybody in Australia to have PGP encryption. It's okay for us here in the United States. Well, yeah, I struggle with this. We should all have the ability to access encryption. We all have things that we wish to keep private. Yes, there are people out there that want to keep illegal things private, but you and I, we still have things we don't want anyone to know about, or we want very few people to know about so we can share it with them. And, you know, I hear people say all the time, oh, I've got nothing to hide. Well, yeah, really? Do you wear clothes? You do have something to hide. I mean, that's the easiest approach there. As a country, yes, we should be promoting American-made technology. And this is prioritizing the idea of the technologies that we have here over foreign options. And what that will do is it will reduce the risk of hostile surveillance. So there are countries out there that do provide hardware and software, and they sell it to us. TP-Link, a big, huge thing in the last few months, where the routers that we're getting from China, all of these Wi-Fi routers throughout our homes, this is the number one Wi-Fi router in the country, and there's a lot of suspicion and belief, not unfounded, that the Chinese are using this hardware to spy on us. Does that mean that we need to completely abandon the usage of TP-Link and ban it? I don't know about that, but we as individuals need to be thinking about this, and we need to be making active efforts to avoid any of these different companies which may have an interest in finding out a lot more information than just what we're posting out on Facebook. we need to be also educating everyone in regards to privacy. And I try to do this on a regular basis. I try to talk about the idea that we do need to be careful about what we're doing on the internet. And we need to be utilizing things like virtual private networks and secure browsers. And yes, encryption kind of pops back into here. We all need to be using various tools to ensure that whatever we're doing is not out there. And that is that's something that I think everybody has fallen behind on. Yes, there are a lot of different things that we do. We set up so that we've got secure connections with our bank. But we really need all the way along to be thinking about every action we're taking on the internet. This person surfing this particular news website all the time, we know his political stance. We know this one's surfing this particular political website, we know their political stance. So we can start to see some of these different things where seemingly harmless information can be used against us. And you think it's, you know, I'm XYZ political party. Why, you know, why does it matter to anybody? Well, yeah, it does actually, because there's a lot out there that they start taking apart a lot of those details. It's associating so many different things. And I don't like that, that whole idea of big data and tracking everything. And speaking of big data, I think we need to hold tech companies accountable, at least as far as transparency on how our data is collected, how it's stored, how it's shared, and we need to have better privacy safeguards across the board from all of these tech companies. We shouldn't be finding out years later that Siri was utilizing everything we said to market to us. Same thing with Facebook, same thing with Google. Look, like a home that is protected by secure walls and locked doors, we need to ensure that technology will respect our privacy without compromising our freedom. And that takes all of us approaching this from a very thoughtfully built process in our lives. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Brad reached out to me, what steps should I take if my computer gets compromised by a virus or ransomware attack? And Brad reached out to me at computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. You can do it too. I'll answer your computer questions, your technology concerns. We'll walk you through all of this. Brad's question, what should he do if his computer gets compromised by a virus or ransomware attack? And sometimes dealing with these, once you realize you have this, you're going to be struck with panic. And it is like discovering a whole horde of termites in your home. At first, it starts off, it sounds like it's a small issue, but if you leave this unchecked, it's going to eat away at everything that you've worked so hard to build. In the business world, I've had to train a lot of people. What you do when you get one of these is you have to tackle it head on. First off, you need to disconnect immediately. You've got to unplug that device from any kind of network, whether we're talking about the internet, your home network, all of this. You've got to stop the malware from spreading or sending any information back to its source. Frequently, these days, we're finding it out after the fact, but you don't want it to spread throughout all of the different devices that you have that might potentially be affected. Fortunately, there is a little bit of ability to stop cross-contamination. For instance, a virus that is written for Windows is not going to infect your Mac PC. It's not going to infect your smart home items. It's not going to spread throughout that, but it could spread to your spouse's computer if they're running the same operating system and things like that. So we want to disconnect. Next up, you've got to assess the damage. If you have another clean device, you can utilize that to research the type of virus or ransomware that's affecting your system. You've got to look for identifying signs. What are the? There might be a ransom note. There might be an unusual behavior to files or messages that are popping up on your system. You've got to find out what you have. Much like if you have a virus in your system, you've contracted one of the big ones we all researched across the internet back in its heyday 5 years ago was it was COVID-19, the coronavirus. And we said, okay, I have a sniffle. Do I have COVID? Not likely. Oh, I've lost my sense of taste. I've got a fever. I've got this, that, and the other thing. And yeah, we would find out, yeah, we probably do have this nasty virus. And so you've got to do that research. And you've got to assess what is the damage through that research. You can frequently go into, we've got something called safe mode on the Windows side. There are some repair utilities over on the Mac side as well. And you can reboot your system into a different mode, which might allow you to access the information that's on your system that will also limit any of that malware's ability to operate. This step can often prevent further damage. Next up, you can run antivirus or anti-malware software. If you've got ransomware, usually not. By the time the ransomware hits, it's already gone through. It has encrypted your drive and then said, hey, we've locked you down. We've locked you out. You can get all of your information back if you pay the ransomware. If you arrive at this point where it's all encrypted, I'm going to tell you to go to your backup. Wait, you don't have a backup? Yeah, that's a problem. Like I tell everybody, I've been saying this, I've been preaching this for so long. You have to have backups. And we're talking about backing up to external hard drives, especially on a pattern where you're not ever connecting up the same hard drive's backups at the same time. You've got to be utilizing things like OneDrive and Dropbox, shifting your data off to the cloud and protecting it there. Sometimes these ransomware items, these attacks are going to hit you on something like, yes, all of these cloud-based systems. But we're going to have to do our best to kind of rebuild you back from where you were a week before, a month before you got attacked. So you run your antivirus or anti-malware software, utilize something that you trust to scan and remove infections. If you don't have anything like that installed on your system, shame on you. You can use another device to download a reputable one onto a USB stick. That might give you some additional help along the way. The last item on my list here is probably the most important one that we all need to be thinking about. We all need to be preparing for, especially as all of these viruses and malware and ransomware, as they continue to permeate the internet, as they continue to travel from computer to computer, you need to be preparing and budgeting for professional help, for assistance from cybersecurity experts, trust trusted IT professionals that can help you through the process of removal, of recovery, of getting past what is really, for most of us, beyond our expertise. And I will tell you, I've dealt with viruses since way back in the day. I have had to rely on external help, even though I have a lot of experience that is adjacent to exactly this. Yes, malware and all of that. I have dealt with a number of different packages, and along the way, I've had to reach out and I've had to ask people for assistance, saying, hey, this is what I've got going on. I'm thinking of going in this direction, that direction. What do you think? How does this work? And we have to get together as a team to tackle this. I'm going to tell you, getting hit by any of these, whether it's a virus or Trojan, any of the ransomware, any of these malware packages, it's going to feel overwhelming. But just like calling in the exterminator for those termites, if you take swift and decisive action, you can move towards restoring order. By following everything through, you can protect your data and prevent future attacks from wreaking havoc across your digital world. Remember, budgeting, planning for this, it will happen. And yes, creating backups. Both of those are great items to prepare in advance. Find out who the tech is that you're going to call first when you get hit, too. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting, archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, IT professionals, and some of the things that come along with all of that. I want to take you back in time, and I'm going to tell you a story first in regards to this topic, which we'll cover over the course of the next couple of weeks. This week, I want to kind of introduce my experience with this. I'm going to start it off with saying, hello, my name's Benjamin, and I burned out. Yeah, this is not a 12-step program, and I'm not going to pretend like it is, but I am going to go back in time to my late 20s, and I was working at a company, and in that company, I did exactly that. I burned out. I was putting in 80-plus hours a week and was really just not getting any time to myself. And we're talking, I would work Monday through Friday. I would start off the day by getting in the car before 6 o'clock in the morning, arriving at 7 before anybody got into the office. And I would work through the entire day, missing break times, lunch times, bonding times, you know, the water cooler gossip and all of that. And I was managing a team of 6 and still just under the gun, just really facing a lot of problems with a lot of different things. I was also going in. I'd get home at about 10 or 11 and then turn around and do that again. Occasionally, I might get home a little bit earlier, but that would be more of an exception rather than the rule. I would go in on Saturdays for 8 to 10 hours. I'd work Sundays for another 8 hours, and I wasn't getting any days off. Oddly enough, my boss kept coming to me and saying, hey, you need to get more work done. We've got this project. We've got that project. We've got all of these different things that you've got to get done right away. Along the way, while I was working for the company, I broke my clavicle and I wound up not able to take more than, actually, I didn't take any time off because I just worked from home for a matter of a couple of days to just get past that. I couldn't drive because of the pain meds I was on for the first few days. Then I decided to brave through it. Yes, this is not really an ideal situation. This is distinctly burning out. You know, you start putting in that roughly 90 hours a week, and eventually something is going to break. In my case, it was really rough. I want you to imagine your energy like the battery of a smartphone. So you charge it up, and everything runs smoothly. But if your smartphone goes all the way on down, it gets down to that last 20%, that last 10%, you put it into low power mode. And on some of the smartphones, it automatically does that. It's trying to preserve what little you have. If your body is always running on low power mode and you are ignoring the warning signs, you're just driving through all of this, burnout is going to be around the corner. This is a problem that exists throughout the IT industry. We do hear regularly of people who burn out in IT, and they will move forward. This is something that for years they call it a young person's game because that's what happens. The folks that work for companies, you know, I hear of these 20-year-olds and 25-year-olds, and they dash off and they go to work for Microsoft. They go to work for Blizzard or whoever else it is that they go to work for, and they barrel on through and they push hard. And this extends to Google. This extends to Meta. This extends across the industry. All of the big names, they're looking for all kinds of different results, and they don't want the results today. They don't want them yesterday. They want them a year ago. They are pushing hard for those results, and they have little care in the industry for that. And there are companies out there, don't get me wrong, there are plenty of companies out there that look for work-life balance, that work for all kinds of different efforts to make sure that you are healthy all the way along, both physically and mentally. And that is a struggle for many people to find, and that is unfortunate. And that's because a lot of this industry we're talking technology, and we're talking about technology that is on a growth path that is going through the roof. And along with that, there's a problem with companies finding folks who are going to work those 14, 16-hour days on a regular basis. All you know, they're paying heavily for it, and people see those dollar signs, and they think, hey, I'm going to go for those dollar signs. And I'm going to do great, and I'm going to be able to do this till I retire, and I'm going to be a gazillionaire. And that doesn't really follow through. It doesn't pan out very well as they burn out after 2 years, 3 years, maybe four. Most of them go on. They find another place later, hoping to find a little bit of balance. Does it come to them? I don't know. It's worked out okay for me since then. But it took a lot, and I've had to keep an eye on what are the common signs of burnout, how do you deal with it, how do you balance things, can you prevent it, and all of that. And that's what I'm going to talk about in the coming weeks. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Allison reached out to me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. We had a wonderful conversation in regards to smartwatches and what I actually utilize. I do have one smartwatch, which I rarely put on, but it does sit here. It's a Citizen, and actually I've got a few Citizen watches, but they are not smartwatches. She recalled that I prefer mechanical watches, and she wanted to dive a little deeper into that, at least to find out my fascination with them. And it is kind of odd. I am a nerd, and as a nerd, you would expect that I would be very up to date, and I would have the latest Apple Watch, and I would have the latest over in the Android watches and things like that. But no, I have really gotten hooked on the mechanical watches, and there's really, to me, there's only one real major downside to the mechanical watch. If I want to see text messages, if I want to look up anything, any of the big features that come through those notifications, I'll actually go to my smartphone. Even when I'm wearing my smartwatch, I am so ingrained into utilizing the smartphone. As a matter of fact, I know people who even eschew the concept of wearing any kind of watch because they have that big, huge smartphone sitting in their pocket and they can refer to it for everything that they need. I don't go in that direction because I do need to know what the time is on a regular basis, and I do like having a watch. I've worn watches my entire life. The mechanical watch, the self-winding automatic watches, is where I've really wound up with, and that is because there's a certain feel to them. It is a different kind of thing. Even as I rotate my hand around, I can feel the gears kind of working inside the spring and all of that as it winds up the watch. The biggest downside to me is the accuracy of any kind of a mechanical watch is going to be less than the accuracy on a quartz watch or even on the smartwatches, which get their time straight from the internet through your phone, and they're constantly perfectly timed. At the same time, if you look around and if you're really that in tune to ensuring timing is accurate, then you can just set your watch each day. There's kind of that little difference in that. The upsides, I don't have to worry about this watch, the watch I'm wearing at the moment. I think I got it for about a little bit better than half the price of a smartwatch. And I feel like it's far more durable. This will go to 200 meters. Water resistance. The Apple Watches, I think they give a guideline at 50 or maybe it's 100. I don't have to worry about this throughout most of the day. Even if I bang it around and things like that, I know that it's going to be very solid. So that's kind of where I've wound up with it. And there's a lot more to this. And, you know, it's an avenue that I find fascination in. Is it right for everybody? Who knows? As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.